Welcome to Sprinkle with Hope podcast and your host Shane. Today, our guest is Suzanne Falter. She gives amazing insight to things that she's learned through the passing of her daughter. Really, really good insight. I was very touched by her story and her thoughts. I hope you listen in and really think about what she's talking about.
Yeah, she talks about the loss of her daughter, and that is a vulnerable thing to do, and she told us, some of those details and things about it. And, but, what she's gained from on the other side of this, I think could help anybody that's going through the grieving process and, or that needs to hear, maybe some ways to kind of help yourself with self-care and how to think about yourself a little bit more, to really internalize and take care of yourself. So, We want to thank you guys for listening to our podcast. We really do appreciate each one of you, and know that Shane and I are sending our love, appreciation. You're worthy. You're worth it. You're loved by many, and you are enough and needed in the world today. So thank you for each one of you that listen. And here we go. Suzanne Falter.
Welcome to the Sprinkled with Hope podcast.
Welcome to Sprinkle with Hope podcast and your host, Shane. Today we have an amazing guest, Suzanne Falter. After losing her daughter, Teal, in 2012, she discovered the healing power of self-care. She now hosts the Self-Care for Extremely Busy Women podcast and is the author of multiple self-help titles, including The Extremely Busy Woman's Guide to Self-Care. Her essays have appeared in Self, More, Fitness, New Women, and the New York Times, as well as O. Suzanne, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Shane. I'm glad to join you.
So tell us a little bit about how you got to this point in your life. You lost a daughter and then you discovered self-care. Just talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Okay. So there's this saying I uncovered after my daughter's death, which is, when something like this happens, you either become bitter or you become better. And I just decided better would work for me. Going through the loss of a child really is certainly the worst thing that ever happened in my life. But it also was really a profound experience in reinvention, because at the time of her death, I was a workaholic. I had just let go of a very successful business because I had completely burned out on it. I was driving around the Bay Area with my stuff in a storage unit because the relationship I was in had just ended. I had given up my apartment to move in with this person, and I had no place to live because like 2 months earlier, I moved in and then it was over. And I didn't know where I wanted to live. I didn't know what I was going to do for work. It was like my whole life had just been thrown up in the air, and I had only arrived 2 years earlier. So I didn't even have a lot of friends. I had like kind of like nothing. My daughter, by contrast, was a free spirit who would go to an airport with some money in her pocket that she'd earned being a waitress and look at the departure board and just pick a place.
Wow.
Where
could she afford to go? And she'd have her backpack and her guitar, and she was completely self-sufficient. And she didn't know how long she'd be going. She would like email us a day or two later, "I'm from Morocco." I mean, literally.
Wow.
And she was an extraordinarily present person and a very joyful person who had fun a lot of the time. Now, she also had epilepsy, and her death was caused by a medically unexplainable cardiac arrest. And one in, several thousand epileptics goes through something called sudden unexpected death in epilepsy. And that is maybe what happened to her, though one of the leading experts in the world on this condition has told me even he can't really say for sure.
Wow.
And all I know is she was living in San Francisco. She had decided to, stay put for a little while, which was maybe 6 months. And I was living there as well. And she had just gotten her apartment and she wanted to be a healer. And she wanted to begin that healing work. She was going to begin the healing work the next day by going to the free college here, the City College in San Francisco, and taking classes in, you know, astronomy and Native American medicine and, you know, things that she thought were kind of healing-ish. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that was going to teach her to be a healer. And this was something she came up with on her own. She was actually trained to be a blues singer. She was a trained singer. And that's why she went around with her little guitar, right?
Makes sense,
so,
yeah.
So this... Sorry about the dog.
You're good.
No problems.
Got a puppy back there.
Yeah.
No impulse control. Okay. So Teal, my daughter, took off and, you know, was having this big adventure in healing. And we went to dinner. And that night we heard a lecture about shamanism and the connection between the worlds. And she was really acting weird at dinner. She was not as smiley and effusive. She was really like kind of barely present. Hmm. Whenever she heard the speaker talking about the connection between, you know, the unseen world and the waking world, she would turn around and look at me with this intense expression like, are you getting this? And I'm like, yes, you know, what is up? Why are we having this exchange? You know,
yeah.
I didn't get it. And then 2 hours later, I get a call from the San Francisco General Hospital that she is in critical condition and she's had 2 cardiac arrests and she's in an induced coma, which she may never come out of. And that was when I walked into her hospital room and I had this profound coming to terms with how broken my life was. And how my daughter, my wonderful daughter, who had so very little in life, but was so happy, was probably going to die. It was a life-changing moment, really a life-changing moment, because I saw that I had to get my act together. And that if she was going to die and I was going to live, I had to do it right. I couldn't just, you know, work my way through the rest of my life, not being fully engaged, not even knowing what my values were, let alone living them.
Mm-hmm.
And so 6 days later, we took her off life support and she passed away. And it was a really heartbreaking experience. But at the same time, it was shot with strange moments of joy because she lived a truly joyful life and really inspired me and showed me what's possible. And it was just this strange total loss of so much.
Yeah.
And, you know, I came out of it. I didn't work for 2 years. I said, okay, whatever that former work was, I will never do it again. I lived extremely simply. I had just gotten divorced from my first marriage and I had my divorce settlement and that carried me through a couple of years. If I was very careful and frugal. And I lived for free in a friend's guest room and kept the dog company and made nice meals for her and kept her company. And it was strangely peaceful and happy, weirdly happy, though I was grieving at the same time. And I had a lot of space to grieve. I was alone a lot. And by really giving myself all that time to process what had happened, and by not demanding I go back to work doing the same thing, which believe me, I tried, by the way, failed miserably multiple times.
Yeah.
You know, websites got hacked. It was like people busted in and took stuff. It was just, no, okay, I'm not supposed to do it. I'll back off. And I didn't know what I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
So I just lay loose and I would meditate on this. And all the only real intuition I ever got was just surrender. You're doing fine. Just surrender. And along the way, I found self-care. And that was my self-care. My self-care was to go within, but not isolate myself. I joined various support groups, including parents who'd lost children. You know, I reached out to the local hospice and got free counseling, which was just amazing. Who knew hospices did this? You know, I found friends. I got into some recovery work and I found friends there. And I began to build this world for myself that had been missing. And it was like all the infrastructure I hadn't had. I worked out every day. I ate a lot of healthy food. I spent lots of time in nature. I slept a lot. I cried a lot. And I wrote essays all the time. And I am a writer. That is how I express myself, one of the ways. And, you know, all of that was really an effort in self-care. And so pretty soon it became clear I had something to say about self-care. And over time, that really emerged as my message. And then the way the book got published was an agent was reading my blog. She found me through a different project, and she read my blog, and she's like, "What have you got that's like this?" So I was like, "Well, I could do a book about self-care, maybe for extremely busy women." She's like, "Like that,
yeah."
I did that, and I started the podcast, and then I started this Facebook group. What's really crazy about it is I started this Facebook group, the self-care group for extremely busy women, more of the same. And, you know, I had like 500 women, and then I had 1,000, and then I had 6,000, and then I had 10,000. It sort of plateaued out. I was like, okay, this is great. I've got 10,000 women who really want to help each other with self-care. Teal would be so happy. And it was kind of superficial. It was like, how many times a month do you get your nails done? It was like, sleeping potions do you take to sleep? Yeah. It wasn't really about the inner work of self-care. And what was pretty wild was one day last February, in February 2021, I woke up expecting to see the usual 30 people wanted to join. It's a closed group, so you have to ask to join and, you know, agree to a few simple ground rules. And 2,700 people wanted to join. And I'm like, hey, that's 2,700 of the same person. And this is a tech glitch, right?
Yeah.
It was 2,700. Wow. Women wanted to join this from all over the world. And the following week it kept up. At one day I had 5,000 people who wanted to join. So at any given time, very quickly, I had about 10,000 people waiting to join the group.
Wow.
I had more than 100,000 people show up to join this group in about 6 weeks.
Wow.
Holy smokes.
One of my questions was, do you agree to follow the rules? And anybody who said no, it was like, great, don't delete them. I had to go through them one by one. And then I had to hire a team of people to go through them one by one. Because it was time consuming, you know?
Yeah.
And there are fake profiles out there. And there were men who wanted to be in the group. It's really a group for women and non-men, as we put it. Mm-hmm. And it's a group that suddenly got much deeper. And suddenly people are talking about the state of their marriages and why can't I find friends and my boss is sexually harassing me. And I mean, real self-care.
Yeah.
The whole picture started to really show up. And in that time, in that space, we were able to kind of make this group really a healing group. And it continues to this day. There's still about 56,000 women in it now. And it's just the perfect size. And it's the perfect level of support. These women come together from all over the world, total strangers. They completely support each other. This is what my daughter's healing work is, I think. Because I don't have a lot to do with it. I just set it up. I moderate it. I post a little something now and then. I mean, they're not there for me. Believe me. Right. They're there for each other as well. Yeah. They should be.
Absolutely.
And, that has been extremely inspiring to me and a lot of fun.
That's awesome. I love it. And I'm all about the inner work and, you know, really working on yourself. Can you kind of break that down for people who may not understand what inner work means? Because some may not, you know, grasp onto that concept of what inner work is, right? Like they think going to the salon or, you know, this, that, and the other thing is, right, is self-care.
Yeah. Well, so like I mentioned, the book, little dog-eared, this copy. I have to look at it, right? But I have these five basics of self-care because the inner work, it begins with understanding what you need. And my theory, Jason and Shane, is that we're born completely aligned. We're little babies who, yes, have all these needs and we're undeveloped, but our basic wiring is there. Mm-hmm. We know what we need and we ask for it. By the time we are adults, we have learned your needs don't matter. Don't listen to your needs because it's not convenient. You'll never get your needs met. You know, your needs may be dangerous. It's like we get a lot of negative conditioning about our needs. Mm-hmm. So one of the first things I started doing at the suggestion of a friend was to very frequently ask myself, what do I need right now? And sometimes I would need to lie in the sun while I was grieving. Sometimes I'd need to go for a drive in the country. You know, sometimes I needed to call my sister. You know, what did I need, right? And then the next thing that comes up is, you know, okay, you're going to implement some of those needs. So you're going to bump into the fact that you may have poor boundaries. I had poor boundaries, and particularly with myself. You know, I expected my employees to, when I was really overworking, you know, to show up on the weekend and put in time and let's do this project. Let's turn it around in 48 hours. We can do it. Come on, you know, adrenalize, you know. And I didn't really understand how damaging that was, nor did I understand how much pressure I was putting on myself.
Yeah.
So boundaries within and without. And certainly if you're on the receiving end of someone who's pushing your boundaries, learning how to say, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that right now. You know, and then number three would be to ask for help when you need it. So part of this whole idea of getting your needs met is sometimes you need to call somebody up and say, I don't know the answer to this. Can you help me? Or could you just sit with me and help me write this letter because I really have to and I'm really having a hard time doing it. People are remarkably touched, open, and willing to support us.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the hardest things to believe. We are taught that we have to be these, you know, superstars who do it all alone. I mean, that is like so woven into the American culture that you can't do stuff on your own. I mean, you have to do stuff on your own. You can't really ask for help.
Right.
But asking for help is not only healing, it's actually more fun that way because somebody else is involved. And then you've got to really take the steps of taking the actions. And this is maybe not the inner work so much, it's the external work, but you got to do the inner work to get to the outer work. Because one of the biggest problems I see among busy women and non-men is people feel guilty. The feminine spirit is conditioned to believe that we should not take care of ourselves first. We should take care of everybody else around us. And then we're going to have to dial back and, you know, downgrade our needs. There are so many women in that Facebook group who say, I don't even know what my needs are. I'm constantly serving everybody else in my family. Nobody does a dish. Nobody washes a load of laundry. You know, like, help.
Yeah.
I can't keep this going because that's the problem. It's not sustainable. And so sometimes taking action is sitting down with the people around you and saying, hey, you need to help me here. I cannot do this. I just can't do this anymore. And it's not fair. And I want to have fun too. You know, I want to have my equivalent of watching the game or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the last thing is to habituate the self-care. Now, for me, you know, meditation would be a very ideal thing to do all the time. I have a new puppy, so meditation went out the window. when that's a habit, I'm sleeping better. I have less anxiety during the day. I'm happier. I'm healthier. Everything is way more chill. So I'm building a new habit. Can I work meditation in before bedtime after the damn dog is asleep? Yes, I think I can, you know? So we're working towards finding little pockets of time in our life when we can just naturally build in the self-care, going for a walk at lunch every day, if you can't get yourself moving. And if you really hate it, putting on, you know, an audiobook or a great podcast or some wonderful music, something to, you know, really mobilize you, or talking to a friend, you know, there's a lot of that kind of stuff. So those are sort of the basics. And I hope that answers your question enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was great advice. You know, I want to thank you for sharing the story about your daughter and that unfortunate thing that happened. But I was picturing a full circle that she wanted to start the healing process, but it actually turned around and became your healing process, that through that tragic act, that tragic moment, that you, through your daughter, have found yourself, basically. I love that, you know, just thinking about that, that was, just beautiful to think about. And I'm sure that she's very pleased with you right now, and you know, is happy. So after that, you started this podcast. You also do a podcast as well, and I'm guessing you talk a lot about the self-care and those type of things.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the beautiful things about hosting a podcast is you get to learn a lot because you talk to a lot of interesting people. and I was like, okay, this could be kid in a candy store here. Who do I want to speak to? And what do I want to learn about? And I've done more than 150 episodes, almost 160 now. And I've interviewed experts on psychotherapy and aromatherapy and, you know, verbally abusive relationships and codependency and, you know, so many aspects. I interviewed a Taiwanese tea expert who runs a beautiful little tea shop in Seattle and who sent me some little bags of tea. And we had like a tea tasting on the podcast.
It was wow.
So cool. Because cool. What's more self-carry than relaxing with a cup of tea, right?
Yeah, right.
And you know, my goal is to keep it fun and interesting. And about every third show, I do my own, you know, topic that I take on. And mm-hmm. I just recently did a show about codependency and what it looks like and why we need to address it when it's real and happening in our lives and how to navigate that. Because, okay, I'm 63. I have learned a lot way a lot in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, by processing it through the podcast and through my writing, because I'm always reading, I start every show by reading one of my blogs, and I have 350 blogs on my website at suzannefalter.com that are all the things I've learned as I've gone on this incredible healing journey. And Teal's spirit is very much around me. So thank you for saying that, because she can't help herself as
right?
this embodied energy that she is. And she's got her healing hands on all kinds of things.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe that.
Yeah. I was picturing that same kind of thing, because you were talking about her wanting to be a healer, and she absolutely became, you know, yours, right? Like,
so true.
You know, your healer. So that's a really cool thing that came from that. So definitely, I'm sure that you feel her.
I'll tell you a little story about that, actually. It's not always a vague and non-specific thing, even. I had this experience when I was sitting in my little office about a year and a half after her death. And I was just like, what am I supposed to be doing? I am really tired of not knowing. Please send me a sign. Somebody, if you're listening, send me a sign. I can't handle it. And I hear this little voice say, look in your inbox. And I had this wire basket of documents that had kind of followed me from place to place in my journey during that period of going here and going there. And I never cleaned it out, because, you know, who wants to clean out their inbox, right? Who even has an inbox anymore? For those who don't know what an inbox is, it's the place you dump all the paperwork you don't want to deal with, right? So I spent a couple hours cleaning out this inbox, just, okay, sure. And I get to the bottom, there's one document left, and I'm like, there's nothing here. What is this supposed to mean? I turn it over, it's a letter from Teal. And she had written this 7 or 8 months earlier and given it to me for Christmas. Let's say 7 or 8 months before her death, right? And she'd given it to me for Christmas. And it was a letter saying that she believed that we were meant to be leaders in light together. And I support you to do whatever healing work you have to do in the world, Mom, as a leader in light. I just want you to know that.
Wow. That is, yeah,
that is extraordinary.
Definitely a sign.
Right.
Wow. That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. I really felt that story, that right now you're living that out. You're sharing the light, and I think it's still through her. She's with you, and so both of you are sharing that light. That's just an amazing story. So thanks for sharing that. So near the end of the podcast, Jason and I have what we call the double down dose. So I have a question for you, and then Please. Jason will ask a question. We love this part of our show. We love to talk about hope. And so, Suzanne, how would you define hope?
How would I define hope? It is simply surrendering to the flow of life, because life is actually hopeful. Life is not here to bring us down. Life is here to lift us up. But we forget to listen. We forget to tune in. We forget that, you know, our agenda may be less important. I also think that hope has a lot to do with surrendering to what is and accepting what is and finding the hope behind the morass of whatever the conflict is, whatever the static is, whatever the upheaval is or the crisis is. There is always hope on the other end of it, but you got to believe that and you got to look for it. And sometimes you have to not know for several years, like I did.
Yeah, I agree. We love asking these questions, because I really think it kind of gets to the heart of what we have, you know, what we really believe. And so the second question I would ask is, what is your definition of love, or how would you define love?
Again, it's the flow of life. It's what is. It's the energy that connects people, for sure. Thiel had this theory about the unified field of love, which I really didn't hear about till after her death. And it came to me in a meditation, and I could clearly hear her saying, surrender to the unified field of love, which is this energy that connects us all as human beings. We're all given the capacity to vibe together on that higher level of knowing and understanding. And we live in a world that's extraordinarily contentious at the moment, but only because it is leading us to this place of higher knowing and higher vibration by presenting the contrast and allowing us to choose, how do we want to live the rest of our lives? How do we want our civilization to be? How do we want our world to shape itself?
Yeah, I love it. I agree with you, because I think, you know, if you get to the crux of what we're all made of, right? We're all made of matter, which is energy. Mm-hmm. And so energy flows to and through us and all around, and people on the other side. So I'm with you. I love it.
You know, Thiel left behind journals in which she had meditated. She was a big meditator, and she would write down notes of messages she received in her meditations every day for several years. And one of them, I found a whole thing about how her epilepsy was nothing more than a flow of energy, a current of energy through her body that was different, but it was her connection to, you know, the universe and to what is her spiritual connection. And it really reflects what you're saying about energy. You know, if it is matter and if it is matter energy, then love is the healing energy.
Yep, I agree.
Awesome.
Really agree.
Love it.
Yeah, great discussion with you today. We really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us and share very insightful thoughts and your experiences in life. Truly appreciate your time and your thoughts, Suzanne. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate the chance.